All right, and we are back with the After Dark. Following that, I was going to say the word epic, and then that was going to out me as an aging millennial. So it wasn't epic, but it was some other word right. Like epic.
It was bussin', for real, for real.
No, it was bussin', for real, for real, no cap.
No, but that makes you even more millennial to say that, because it's like you're appropriating Zoom.
Does it really?
Yeah. Just say epic.
Oh, yeah, and that would
just
be
can't win.
Thing to do.
You just can't win, man.
Fucking Zoomers.
So if you're listening to this, you probably listened to that episode on Anais Nin. I stumbled over saying her name a couple times because I always said it Anais, and apparently it's Anais, so whatever.
Anais,
And
Patreon, we love you. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed that episode. This was an epic weekend for Art of Darkness. This was nuts. We got great guests, two Leafs. So are we being
who's your other guest?
Yeah. Stephanie Leahy, who is a medievalist who helped us with Crowley. She more or less single-handedly wrote a 50-page outline for Crowley.
It was like an academic monograph on Aleister Crowley. It was amazing.
It was staggering, unreal. And but we're happy to host our neighbors in the Globo Homo Empire that is North America.
The petri dish of the empire. The germ culture. Yeah. The Kaposi sarcoma of the empire.
Wait, I gotta ask you, because I haven't dropped the episode yet. I'm gonna post it here shortly. But Gio, that line, well, I think I'm gonna call it Anais or Anais Nin's erotic trapeze. I like that
as a title.
I like
that word. Okay, that gets approval. All right, on it. What are we going to talk about on this one, Brad?
Yeah, as we said, as we special. Alluded to, we're going to talk about
actual incest.
Anais Nin's sexual relationship with her father. We talked about the abuse as a child, and her thoughts on it at the time. But later on in their life, they would hook up. Now, I want to just read
a New Yorker story about this similar woman.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there was this writer. You remember that? Was it New Yorker? Was it some other I think it was New Yorker. Talking about having sex with her father.
Yeah, there is a weird thing. Apparently, this is a kind of a known phenomena biologically that especially Nin was separated probably too young for this to be
this
to play a factor. When you're separated like immediately, apparently when you meet up later, there's like a very compelling attraction oftentimes.
Because it's sort of like a coping mechanism in a way.
And it's like at some genetic level, there's like some kind of resonance there, but it's confusing, and so you mistake it for sexual attraction or something. I don't know, but there's cases of this. This I don't think is what it was with what it was with Nin. I'm gonna read I'm gonna read a bit here. This is again from the Deirdre Bear biography. They meet up in Paris. He's in Paris. What year is this? Sorry, give me a second to figure out what the year is. I think it's 1934. So she'd be like 31 years old. If it's not 1934, it's right around there. It might be 1935.
Yeah, she was in her 30s and he was in his 50s.
So they meet up the next day, and this is after they first made contact. The next day, her and her father, drove around the Grand Corniche. He regaled her with stories of his love affairs, bragging about, quote, playing with souls. She watched his face and knew he was truthful, talking to me as I talk only to my journal. Also, she noted dryly, it was at a certain moment inevitably untrue. It's kind of weird. Joaquin Nin, her father, was much improved except for some residual effects of lumbago. So he invited his daughter to spend the evening in his room. As he lay in bed, he described her mother's gross sensuality as a bride. Anais was profoundly shocked, first because it, quote, it is strange to discover the sexual lives of one's parents, and then because her mother had always seemed so reserved and puritanical about, quote, sex, religion, morality. Joaquin's version was of a poor, picked-upon aristocrat, badly mated to an older, vulgar shrew who yelled, screamed, made scenes, and was careless about her personal hygiene. What prevented this elegantly refined man from leaving this impossible union was the deep love and devotion he felt for his children, his strong Spanish clannishness, sense of paternity, sacredness of family. His tale touched Anais so profoundly that when she began to record it in her diary, she decided to write only about, quote, the king, the solitary and obstinate visionary, visionary of balance, fairness, logic, transcendentalism. It was an astonishing reversal, an instantaneous rejection of everything Rosa Comelle, her mother, stood for, and a total repudiation of her character and behavior. Anais was well aware that she was sitting with her father and listening to stories of his sex life with her mother. There was never any doubt that she was his daughter and he was her parent, at least not in her written account. How or why she lost sight of it is known only to her, but it may have happened when they shared tales of their mutual diabolicalness. She told her father how she had taken Arto to the same hotel and room where Allende took her. He smiled, saying he had often done that very thing. It's this power move thing, right? It gave them a strong shared bond, he said, and proved their superiority to everyone else. They continued to chat, but she was infected with a malaise, a difficulty in finding the relationship. Boundaries had begun to blur as each vied to top the other with accounts of how they had betrayed mates, confounded lovers, and triumphed over inferior partners in their various assignations.
Whoa.
As she bade him goodnight and
Daddy's
bent for
little
his,
vixen.
Yeah, right. As she bade him goodnight and bent for his fatherly kiss, she suddenly realized that she did not have quote, the feelings of a daughter. She offered her cheek, he bent his head and kissed her neck. He disturbed her. She was afraid of him. The next morning, she found him unable to move, almost paralyzed with the relapse of lumbago. She spent the day in his room wearing only her satin negligee. They continued along the lines of their conversation the night before, exchanging stories of their conquest. She told him of Allende's whip. Apparently, Allende used a whipper. Describing the part of herself that seemed another person, aloof and observing as the whip descended, offended by the commonness of what was happening to her. Joaquin Nin listened absorbedly, but said nothing. After a long pause, he said, "You are the synthesis of all the women I have loved." She watched him watching her. She stretched out at the foot of his bed and allowed him to caress her foot. He told her how beautifully formed she had been as a child and how much he loved to take her photograph. She
remembered none
of the fear and shame these moments induced in her as a child, recording only the pleasure of his compliments as an adult. The hours passed. Then he told her of his dream the previous night of how she masturbated him with jeweled fingers and how he kissed her like a lover. Silences, long silences punctuated every statement that dotted the stillness of the peaceful summer afternoon until he said, "I don't feel towards you as if you were my daughter." And she said, "I don't feel as if you were my father." Another long pause, and then he asked, as if it were the problem she too shared, "What a tragedy. What are we going to do about it? I have finally met the woman of my life, and it is my daughter. I'm in love with my own daughter." Very quickly, she responded, "Everything you feel is reciprocal." And so then they descended into a fairly brief, I think it was a couple of months, sexual relationship.
Did she describe it, sex with him?
I don't have it here, but I think she did. And she would refer to him as him, capital H, in her diaries, right? Like he's the leading man in her life. She tells of how she referred to him as the lionic jungle king, the most viral man she had never known, that she would leave him through her into a frenzy of profound passion.
Wow.
I do have one part, another part. Here we go. Another suspense, she wrote, noting how she was afraid to say anything that would shatter the mood. This was like another time. He asked her to move nearer and then to kiss him on the mouth. She was tortured by a complexity of feelings. I'm peppering in diary bits here. Among them that she was about to, quote, kiss a brother rather than a father. As she lay across his erect penis in her slippery thin negligee, he in a loosened bathrobe, she felt, quote, more terror than joy, the joy of something unnameable, obscure. They exchanged caresses upon their bare flesh while he cautioned that they must avoid possession. In the meantime, he made her nipples harden and inserted his finger in her vagina until, with a strange violence, she lifted herself, threw off her negligee, and mounted him. "You, Anais, I have lost God." That's a quote from her father, apparently, in her diary. So this went on
That's intense.
It's really
Holy
intense.
Crap.
And this went on for a few months.
That's biblical right there.
And then, interestingly, and I think this speaks to psychologically what's going on, after a few months, she just abandoned him. She just stopped responding to his letters. Because I think part of what was going on, it wasn't the whole thing, but part of what was going on is she was getting power back on him because now she had abandoned him. It wasn't
this is what this essay I read said. Yeah, this essay, it's called Incest in the 90s. About like recursion memories, and that was a big thing, you know, if we're old enough to remember. and how like unreliable narrative mixed in with the whole like repressed memory shit. But it was about like how Anais Nin was sort of like true Electra, like it's sort of like the jeu d'essence of conquering that which abandoned you by abandoning him. Mm-hmm. So she, in one sense, she becomes the conqueror over a man that has so much immense power over her and influenced her throughout her whole life. And certain, especially you could argue her first sexual awakening
when
she was little. And it's very much, you could say, like, again, themes of incest are often untalked about for a reason in literature, but they do come up, even if there's allusions to it. But in terms of the typical, nowadays, when it comes to the study of incest, what's really weird is that in literature throughout history, it's always the father and the daughter, usually. And that, and feminist scholars would talk about patriarchal norms, blah, blah, blah. You know the whole bit.
Yeah.
So, but here, it's a reversion of that story, but nowadays it's mostly mother-son that is now starting to be talked about because of pornography, because of the MILF porn, because of tropes, certain tropes in anime, certain tropes in literature. It's very rare throughout history that you have a domineering mother. And people could say that that's because of patriarchal norms, blah, blah, blah. But here you have, in some ways, both, again, like Sartre said once, there's a blending between victim and victimizer. They meet in the middle after a while. They're both victims and they're both victimizers equally in some ways. Because she just as much victimizes him and vice versa. Now you could say that because he groomed her and sexually implanted these sexual ideas in her, of course he's the one that is a parent and he's responsible. But later on, it's almost as if Anais Nin is like portraying it as like she is the one that is on top now. She, greedily mounts him and rides him. And it's like he is powerless in her.
Right.
It's very much similar. It's like kind of like Lolita in a way, with Nabokov. Like in hindsight, in our own world, we could say, yeah, it's terrible. It's disgusting. Mm-hmm. But the way that it's written, it's almost as if the main character, I forget his name in Lolita. What's his name?
Humbert.
Humbert. He's powerless. Yeah. He's totally powerless, and he's destroyed by that relationship. And then she leaves him. It's not this angelic, I'm getting my perfect lolly anime lolicon girl. It's like, no, she ends up just, oh my God, why did I fucking say that? But it's patriarchal.
You got to get offline, Gio. You got
to touch grass, brother. Touch grass.
Yeah.
Emergency break grass in case of emergency.
It's not that, like Lolita, Hubert doesn't get this perfect cunny lolicon shit. It's like, no, she fucking destroys him from the inside out. So, and people forget that about Lolita, right? So, but here Anais Nin is confessing to this abominable act, but it's like, she is the one that is in possession of her father, Joaquin. And it's like, a lot of like literary critics look at this moment as like an extension of shock, but there's something deep within Anais Nin's psyche. I mean, why do you think her sexual licentiousness and promiscuity and cheating on men, and like, what do you think that it becomes so prominent in her writing, right? So
double life too, like this split in her must have been rooted. Where did she write this, Brad? Where was this written?
I'm reading out of the biography, so that was some of her writing. It was basically Deidre Baer has taken the part of her diary about this and sort of repackaged it a little bit.
So it was in her diary. Okay.
Yeah. And so some of it could have been embellished or rewritten to sort of fit the narrative Nin wanted to present. But what is true, appears to be true, is that she had a sexual relationship with her father in her 30s. Now, whether it went down exactly like this is kind of, who knows, because only those two know exactly what happened.
This is so crazy because it's like, it's one of the three, I can think of three taboos that are this extreme, right? You have cannibalism, incest, and murder.
Yeah.
Oh, pedophilia.
You're right. I mean, three, four. Yeah.
And the thing that I kind of thought about it was like, just thinking about Nin as being this person, that whole notion of like her interior world and exterior world are sort of are merged. You know, it made me think like if you are in, what is the what is it called when you do, there's a therapeutic trick that some people think is BS, but that does actually work to a certain point. You do the eye movement tracking.
EMDR.
Yeah. And then you go back and you re-remember something and you sort of reconstruct the narrative in a way that's like
memory healthier. Castle is another one. Yeah.
You could imagine where someone would take, all right, you're shattered by your father abandoning you. So let's go back to that moment. And in the moment when he abandons you, you reject him instead. Right. Mm-hmm. You can see how possibly that could be helpful maybe for somebody. Right.
She's also just a horny little mix.
Oh God. Yeah.
I mean, so not to overthink it too much. Yeah. I mean, you know, this is one of the things that we notice among a lot of.
A lot of our artists have this problem
is that they reverse engineer a sheen of art over bad behavior.
And that's largely what she did. And I just got to thinking
to
though,
justify
it's like,
it.
There's all kinds of ways. And she, you know, it's so hard to read this stuff because
Burroughs did that too, right? Didn't he kill his wife?
He did. Yeah. Yeah.
He had homosexual relationships or was that some?
Oh no, he definitely did also.
Yeah. He had a bunch of licentious, like,
He liked the cheese pizza too.
Let me
read a little bit because and we can talk more, but I want to make sure this gets on there because it's fascinating. So in the same time when she's sleeping with her father, she's trying to make this thing happen with Arto that's ultimately unsatisfying for both of them, but this is shortly after she sleeps with her father. She saw Arto first in the same hotel and room where she now held all her assignations. Always prescient, he took one look and accused her of the abomination of incest. He had not heard gossip, he said, but he knew this just as he knew instinctively there were other men with whom she was having affairs. She denied nothing. He called her a dangerous, malefic being and stomped out. She reveled in the pleasure it gave her to torture Arto and consoled herself that one becomes more evil as one becomes stronger. So Arto is this weird visionary dude who's in touch with, you know, who knows what Arto was in touch with. He takes one look at her and it's like, you have crossed the line.
You got the devil in you. Yeah.
Nietzschean Anais Nin.
Yeah.
Will to power, to sexual dominance.
But it's a very feminine will to power, though.
Mm-hmm. It's a very feminine will to power.
Yeah, it's control. It's
conquering the father, like literally. Mm-hmm. Like the impossibility in Lacanian, I'm pronouncing it like Zizek, right?
Yeah.
The impossibility in Lacanian.
To
conquer the order of the father. She literally, they conquered the order of the father.
Yeah.
She has sex with the father.
Yeah.
In the Lacanian analysis, the impossibility of going over the order of the father is that in the side.
There's also a possibility there's a story too about her and her brother later where there's a possibility that it's like the last time she ever sees him, Joaquin Jr. I think she tried to seduce Joaquin Jr., her brother, who was like totally aghast at him, had no, you know, was just like, no fucking way. And then she later wrote in her diary that she successfully seduced him. Yeah.
Oof.
Oh my God.
All right.
God.
This is like alt porn, like not sister, not father, not like,
yeah.
This shit is so common nowadays.
I really don't understand why that is jammed down the throat of the culture. It doesn't make any sense.
Because for a variety of reasons, I have a lot of nuclear takes on it, but you go ahead, Brad, you go.
I was just going to say what's weird about it too, is it's like, it's a lot of times, like if you didn't know that was the title of it, you wouldn't even know that was the context. That's what's almost weirder. It's like, why are you even titling it that?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You made it weirder than it even was. I mean, it's already kind of weird, but you made it even weirder just by telling me for no reason that that's the mother and the son. Like, what are you doing?
Bizarre.
Yeah. Oh, you mean pornography? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, in the pornography world. Yeah, yeah.
Stepmother, that's usually helpful.
The step, get around it's usually the legality stepmother. Of it. Right, right, yeah. right. But yeah. It's like they're trying to rewire your brain or something.
It is. Yeah.
It definitely feels like a weird kind of, MK Ultra programming, bizarre, wacky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's because, pornography being inherently transgressive, but not transgressive in like a literary sense. It's gratuitous, obviously. Right. But I think it's because, now that there's an eclipsing of masculinity, the mother takes up the role. And oftentimes even the sister is very dominant in these pornographic films, right? Like I did a lot of research. I wanted to write an article on it, but then for 2 years I've been terrified of actually writing this. Mm-hmm. But I think I've talked about it in a lot of podcasts where psychologically it's the domination of the mother now takes itself into the erotic, because it's playing to, like we said, a male fantasy, but furthermore, it's sort of the domineering older crone archetypally is now in the position of power, politically, culturally, socially. And so pornography is reflecting this very starkly. And I think that the sort of haplessness of the young man in the wake of the older crone is a very powerful theme. And that's driving the politics of our age now. Like even like, but then again, you still have daddy daughter stuff, but that's not as nearly as popular as the MILF, the mother. Yeah. So in a way you could say that incest becomes the final frontier of subversion, but besides that other frontier that I think they're trying to normalize as well. Mm-hmm. You all know the cheese pizzaism, but I think that when it comes to incest, you even have think pieces nowadays in literary journals and in like trash rags, like fucking Jezebel, where it's like, well, why is incest a taboo? Why is it taboo?
Oh yeah. Right. Whoa.
And I've seen this, but the thing is though, I remember I was talking to a woman once who were talking about this. She's also a writer. And she said, you know, if you look at it objectively, it's the love that is unconditional, that is hijacked in the purpose of the sexual and the pornographic.
Right.
Because if that is what men, I think, nowadays long for, the consumer base of pornography, it is love without condition, love without qualification, that they can't find in modern women nowadays. So these fantasies... Right.
Everything's become transactional now.
Right.
And we've forgotten, we seem to have forgotten that there are all different kinds of categories of love. Like even like a loving male friendship between two men it's turned homosexual.
Yeah, Bap talks like, about this.
It's like, no, dude, it's just two dudes who've known each other for a long time and care about each other. Like, it's not sex. Like,
guys who would line up to fight for each other if it came down to it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that gets turned into everything. Like every pairing of two people who have affection for each other, there's always now like, you know, the sex part.
There has to be a new flag for every single constellation of affection. Yeah, right.
But
I think
in Anais Nin's case, what's interesting is that she was one of the first female writers to talk about this. I mean, there's been others, even in antiquity, there was writers about incest as a sacred taboo. You could say that there was suspicion around incest with certain writers and certain poets. But when it comes to Anais Nin, what's interesting is that to her, it becomes a matter of self-affirmation about conquering her trauma and in the most unhealthy and abominable way you could possibly think of. Right.
Right.
And then now Anais Nin, what's very funny is that she talks about men that are younger than her as being a mother to them sexually as well. So she takes on that MILF role that you find.
She does.
I mean, she kills her own children, though.
Yeah,
but she's a mother to these other men, and she also sexually conquered her own father, which is a very, even in Greek mythology, like that inversion of the Electra complex of conquering one's father through the sexuality of the younger woman, like that. But the reality of it is that most cases of this come about from sexual assault and pedophilia. You know, this is why incest is usually equated with pedophilia, because it's either an older sibling or an older relative exploiting the child. But now you have this weirdo fucking liberalism where it's like the think piece space is saying, well, if you're both consenting adults, aren't you? on that, you know.
Yeah, that's the whole, like, any burden I didn't choose, I don't have to subscribe to. That's exactly, that whole thing, right? Exactly. Like,
but you have to wonder,
it shouldn't
if you're
be a taboo because it's not a taboo to me. Yeah.
But you have to wonder, if you're engaging in incest, though, was there not some trauma to begin with there?
Sure. Right.
Right.
Of
so,
course. Yeah.
But then I understand. But here's the thing. Here is this controversial take that I have. Okay. Mm. When it comes to these think pieces, I in some ways can understand, because if you come from a broken home and if you come from a shitty family life, then you can sort of say, well, if my unconscious mind is idealizing a love that is by nature forbidden, but is also unconditional, then maybe pornography is an outlet for it. But then that begs the question, though, rationally, if you're living in a society that enables such content without the awareness of where it comes from, trauma, then it's like fucking Ella girl saying, like, whoa, why can't we just give lolly anime to pedophiles?
Right.
Like, that's not the point, right?
Right.
Because if you live in that reductionist, that ultra-rationalist worldview, then you could easily justify, well, it's not real children.
Right.
You know, like,
but yeah,
by
I mean,
the way,
you can...
she would, Aniston could kind of be like a Ella girl, if you really think about it. So, you know.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. Well, I mean, you can see, that's the thing. That's the problem, is you can rationalize everything. And the fact that it is an interesting, I would say it is an interesting intellectual exercise to say, okay, well, why exactly is incest wrong? Not in terms of coming, I want to come to a point where I'm justifying it, but just like, it is wrong. But okay, what are the underpinnings, and why is it actually wrong? Yeah. That's like a worthwhile discussion to have. But to like assume that because that question is possible to ask, then the answer must be that it's not actually wrong, right?
Exactly. Like, when you pose the question, then that's like,
yeah, and that's the thing that seems.
Have
to
you
get
ever
done
read Flowers in the? Have you ever watched or read Flowers in the Attic?
No, I haven't. No,
that was the one that had brother sister incest.
Okay,
but that was the product of essentially trauma bonding from an incredibly abusive environment where they're locked in the attic and their mother is like this terrible abuser. And like a lot of incest does come from trauma bonding, by the way.
Right. Sounds like in that story, like sort of the point of it, or part of the point of it is like, look at how much this screws people up to have this abuse and stuff, is that it makes everything topsy-turvy, and then somehow a brother-sister romance makes sense to you because of all this pain.
Well, do you guys have siblings or no?
Yeah, I have an older brother.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm an only child, unfortunately. Uh-huh. But I don't know. Like, I don't know what it's like to feel that, like to have a brother or sister, but at the same time, I can guess from other people's accounts, like, why... What do you? It's like,
no, I was just. It's just a joke went through my mind.
Come
like,
on, say.
Gonna,
I know what you mean. I'm like,
it's hot.
Yeah. Anime weeb said this in a board once.
Oh,
some, I wish I had a sister just so I can.
No. Yeah. No, but I was just trying to make a joke, but but I mean,
shit.
Growing up with, you know, my growing up with siblings is intense. Family environments are very, it's a cauldron of
it
competition
is,
and intensity, and
like my parents have siblings. Like my father was, he has four sisters. Well, one passed unfortunately away before I was born, but he was the youngest. But the boy, but in an Italian household, it's like when you're a boy, you know, the firstborn boy, it's like you're the king, right? My mother had my two aunts, you know, my mother was the oldest, so she basically helped raise my two aunts, you know, and being an immigrant, you know, being an Ellis Islander coming here, and it's like you know, having to learn English and raise your sisters, it's like, you know, very typical immigrant story, right? So but no, I mean, myself, you know, I'm an only child, unfortunately, but I think that I can understand from reading into these accounts, like the reason why we talk about this stuff is because it is so prevalent. And why is it prevalent? Why is this fetishism going on? But in Anais Nin's case, that is the debate, though, because you do have this relation between the father figure, whether they were trauma bonded or not. But then when you read their account, like whether Anais Nin embellished it, like we were saying, like it seems they're fucking similar. They're the same, like daddy's girl. Like, like to quote Jim Leahy, and God rest his soul, John Dunsworth. There was that one line where Ricky was saying to Trinity, where Trinity's like, I want to go to jail. And Ricky's like, no, Trinity, don't ever say that. And then you pan up and there's Leahy right next to him. Oh, yes, she will, Rick. Oh, yeah, why is that, Leahy? You know why, Rick? Because the shit apple doesn't rot far from the shit tree. You know? Favorite line, favorite Leahy line right there.
Oh,
you
man.
Know?
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that is almost the weirdest part of it. Not the weirdest part of it, but the most compelling part of it is almost that conversation that Nin and her father have leading up to it, where it's like, oh, you're just like me. You're just like me. We're both we're both evil,
terrible people.
And like, you're the only person who could understand this thing. Right. Like
now you can only utilize and experience all pleasure and emotion and connection through your own body and through exploiting other people's bodies.
Yeah. So there is this weird,
this incest business with her father came out after, right?
It came on in 1990s.
In the 90s.
Yeah. It wasn't generally known.
How did it affect her? How has it affected her legacy? I mean, is it like Burroughs where everybody's like, well, he's our guy, so we don't care.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of a known part of her. See, this is the thing. I mean, the whole, the varying schools of feminism.
The feminist literature, MFA people.
There's different relationships with her. I mean, she gets variously held up and variously sort of has shit thrown at her depending on the mood of the moment. So I don't actually even know what people think of her right now, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. A lot of rad femmes, I believe, they think that she was a victim and that's why she did it, of course. Yeah. So, but I think a lot of literary critics said that was a shelling point in her life and her career because it was so impactful. But I know that rad femmes, even the ones that knew her, they sort of, here's the weird thing, because the debate in radical feminist circles is that, is Anais Nin productive because she's giving such an account of female sensuality? I know Paglia, probably has a lot of good takes on her, but it's like, is she giving an account of female sexuality and sensual nature that has long been overcrowded by patriarchal norms and literature, especially at the time when she was popular? Look at the literary figures that were popular. Hemingway, right. Norman Mailer, giga chad misogynists.
Yeah.
So she was the counter opposite to that.
Yes, but misogynists for the left.
True. They would be like Artie Bros. They would be like they would be like Bernie Bros, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah. So you do have a fair bit of right wing writers who in some weird ways have a very interesting relationship to the feminine. But I think that when it comes to Anais Nin, the other side of the debate is that Anais Nin is a force for evil because she is essentially consenting to the male gaze. In other words, she is delivering herself as a sex object to male fantasies of being this motherly figure that also is imbued with it a sexuality. So a lot of rad femmes have soured on Anais Nin as well, I would imagine. MFA grads, art hoes that go down the FAPE programs, they love her. She's right up there with Frida. She's right up there with Frida, you know?
Yeah, well, that's because part of it is the literary style du jour in some ways is...
Confessional
auto-fiction. Exactly. And Nin is better than almost all of that stuff.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
She is miles ahead of Mattress Girl, ahead of... Who's that one... The one girl, the one woman that wrote the cat story.
Oh, yeah, right. I know what you're talking about. Yeah. No, I know people.
I had drunken sex.
Yeah. Well, I know people hold up Rachel Cusk a lot now, who I personally don't like. And Rachel Cusk is like this weird, I was reading Nin and then I've read Cusk in the last year or so and been just like, there's this notion of Cusk is writing from the real woman's perspective kind of thing. And I mean, I don't know. What do I know about what the women's perspective is, right?
Yeah,
what do I know? But what I do know is that Nin stuff is a lot more powerful and mythological and weird than Cusk stuff is just like... And then,
Giotto Tino?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just
would you recommend Cusk, though? Is she all right?
I don't like it. It's worth looking at because it does represent. She is the exemplar of a thing that's happening now.
Millennial professional writer. Yeah.
And so she's, but she does it. It's a sort of desaturated version where she's trying to, like, everything is on the exterior, kind of, which is a statement in and of itself. I don't think it's all that compelling, but
no, with Aniston, it's pure interiority.
Yeah, exactly.
Just
exactly.
She lives inside of herself all the time.
Which I'm not generally in favor of as a literary style necessarily. Like, I think it's something that has its utility, that interiority. But like when it's her, it's like, it's when you go inside her head, it isn't just, well, I felt this way. It's, there's pyramids and serpents and oceans. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, it's vast. It's much vaster. Her psychic world is huge. Yeah. It's amazing. Universe. So,
but it's covering for objectively shitty behavior though. That's
For sure. This is why she was a perfect candidate. I realized when we did this research, this is a perfect candidate. Cause I was like, she is an amazing writer and also the worst person that I know about, like, at the same time.
She's like the worst pixie girl. She is like the Black Widow of pixie girls. Like, can you imagine being with her? Like, my god. Like,
I was describing
her my whole life up, fam.
I was describing her to my wife and I was like, she's like, she basically is super compelling as a person, and if you met her, you would want to be part of her life, and then she would immediately ruin it. Like, ruin your life, that is. Like, she has that, like, appeal where it's like, oh, magnetically drawing you
to her. She's a black hole, really.
And then she's going to destroy your life. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, I don't have anything else to say. Kevin, I don't know about you.
I'm
torn. Send me the cuss stories, by the way, if you
Well, I read hard copies, so I don't know that I've got anything I can send you.
Yeah, they got to be on the internet. They got to be online. Yeah. I'm torn. This is another case of somebody where you were reading passages from her, and I'm thinking, this is an incredible writer. And I just love how, see, the way where I come from, that doesn't bother me at all. I don't, I really don't care if they're a terrible person at all. That's never once have I ever been concerned about that. People will
only
talk
political
about
writers. That's about it. But like, that's,
sure. But they're all freaks.
But literary company people excluded. And artists.
No, I really don't care. I mean, I don't care.
No, me neither. I mean,
I know exactly what Woody Allen did. And
I'm going to end up reading more of her stuff. I didn't read everything she's written. I mean, I'm not going to read everything, but there's a couple other pieces I want. I want to read Seducing the Minotaur. Her titles are great. Children of the Albatross, Seducing the Minotaur, Cities of the Interior. Right, they're just so they're powerful.
Yeah, even
powerful
House
titles.
Of Incest is an incredible title.
Yeah, it is.
That'll Well, Gio, we went long. I mean, that episode we went 4 hours, and now we've done the After Dark. I do think Munk down the line, that could be very cool. If
We could do it soon, man. We should do it next year, maybe.
Okay, well, maybe we'll slot it in. We'll have to see where we're at. But Brad and I are going to have a production meeting here soon, so we'll definitely think about that, man. You know a lot about Munk, huh? Just sort of out of the gate.
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, he is one of my favorite artists ever. So
pin in that one, Brad.
Not as much biographical, but I could go like painting for painting. I could go into it. So
if we could do the spine of the bio, that'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And again, very, very grateful for your time, my friend.
Man.
It's fun. Really, really a lot of fun.
You humble us with your presence, man. We really do.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It.
Thank
very
you,
cool.
friends.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I wanted to do Nin for so long because she always cropped up in my research into different things, even with the internet. So, and I think that House of Incest is an amazing work of prose. It really is one of the best. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is why to get an opportunity to do it, you know,
good very stuff, man. Banger.
All right, see you, boys. It's been, I gotta go fucking eat. So,
me too. Yeah,
so
all right,
my bedtime.
Guys. All right, hey, we love you, Patreon. Yep. Thank
right,
you.
Ciao.
Keep supporting the show. Take care.
Yeah.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.